Welcome to episode 454 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we feature a great conversation with professor, writer, editor, performer, and bookstore owner, Ned Sparrow. Ned and I delve into subject areas such as Baltimore, Trader's Day, loss, socks that match, kindness, blessings, and he performs a song live by Leonard Cohen titled Never Loved Before. As I mentioned, a great conversation this go-round with Ned Sparrow. We have an EW essay titled Little Kingdom. We share a short essay from the Reader's Write section of the October 2021 issue of The Sun magazine by an anonymous writer. It is titled My Sister Megan is Only 13. And we also have a poem called The Other Day. All of this, of course, will be imbued, infused with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It is so nice to be with you. I hope you're enjoying the winter weather in the Northeast, and if you're elsewhere, lucky you. Let's get to it. Episode 454 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
So you share what's inside, thinking that all is said in confidence. But then you realize this song is heavy. This boat is breaking my bones. This boat is incredibly upsetting. It's your part, you're along for the ride, thinking that all is said in confidence. Yeah, you realize now I'm swimming in the sea.
Oh, Lord, will you know?
kingdom. Hey ho, it's 2022. Let's get on with the show. Spirit is what spirit does. Ain't that the truth, celestial cuz? What is once was, and again he, she, it, they, we do indeed indulge primarily for the buzz. And I watched two middle-aged white men get drunk on national TV. They talked about theater and politics and the dangers to our biosphere caused by your Humvee. And they drank and drank a white tequila mixed with shots of whiskey, seemingly continuously, high above Times Square on an island, while I sat on my couch 100 miles inland atop a mountain, stoned and stuffed with pizza, shrimp, and IPA, my own little kingdom of ego and doubt, ready at a moment's notice to hightail it outta here for some live music, dance, vivacious talk, simple moments of connection, while being amidst the din of this species of creation, creatures of invention, we are. On this planet, we have as our home, deep into the soul, pulsing at the core of my marrow bone. And winter has just begun. The snow out this window falls gently through the sun.
Bye.
Dr. Ned Sparrow, is that you?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today, sir?
I'm well. We have a snow day, so I didn't have to get up at 5 and a quarter to be on court by 6:30 coaching squash.
Excellent.
So that's a break.
Yeah. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you for being on Troubadours and Rock On Tours. I appreciate it.
I'm grateful that you had me.
Well, before we get started, let me share a little bit with our listeners about your background. Ned Sparrow, professor, writer, editor, and performer, among other things, is a collector of modernist literature and a book dealer whose 10,000 books are available online and in select locations, as well as teaching. Ned has worked as a general contractor, a squash coach, and a singer-songwriter. He has lived and taught all over Baltimore and Baltimore County. He has degrees in story and literature from Princeton and Johns Hopkins. Despite the pedigree, Ned is salt of the earth, and Troubadours and Rock On Tours is very happy to have on the program Dr. Ned Sparrow. So, we're talking with you from your place somewhere around or in Baltimore, I guess, right?
Baltimore City.
And I guess you like Baltimore, huh?
I do. It's big for me to live in a city and to be part of the city. I've lived in the county for a bit, raising the kids, but I've had the bookstore for maybe 7 years and lived in the city for the last 10. And it's the great experiment of people living right up on top of other people and making it happen, and love the opportunities and the vistas and the crazy people we inflict on ourselves and become in this tight living space.
Well, you know, and Baltimore in particular is known for having a lot of great characters as part of the community, you know, from what I've gathered over the years.
Yeah, and I'm particularly since I got the brick and mortar bookstore now 5 years ago, I've got a front row seat. I'm right next to Penn Station. It's called Station North Books, and you know, half the time I have people come in trying to sell me stuff, and that's always exciting. And then often I'll have people come in looking for a book or just to talk. And
that's awesome. Part of the community.
It's a space. Yeah.
And again, the name of the bookstore?
Station North Books.
Station North. Yeah.
Yeah.
And are you from Baltimore originally?
I'm from Detroit, Grosse Pointe, East Side. My folks are still there in Michigan. They're in their 80s. They're camp counselors and brought me to music in the car driving up north, as we say in Michigan, from Detroit to a little cabin where we'd sing the whole way.
Nice.
And that, and just coming off of Christmas now. Of course, it's still Christmas until the Kings figure out how to get there. What's that, January 6th?
Right, Russian Christmas, I guess, or...
That's right, something like Epiphany. But now we also recall it as Traitor's Day, and we'll have to see if we can prosecute those who tried to kick it over on the 6th. That's an unfortunate coming together of dates.
Traitor's Day, is that, I mean, traitor as in...
traitors against the country. I mean, I'm thinking of
the insurrection.
Who invited people to come in and try to overturn the legitimate election.
I think you hit it on the head. Trader's Day. Yeah, and I didn't connect the two. That's an interesting connection you've made between, you know, Russian Christmas or the, you know, Epiphany, and then the insurrection, Trader's Day. That's excellent. Thank you for
that. Well, it's something, right?
Yeah.
It's too bad.
It is too bad, but it's part of our history nonetheless, and we can't overlook it or forget it, right?
Right.
So, anyhow, tell us about your background. I mean, you are you're dynamic for certain, you know, a Renaissance man perhaps is a good word or a good phrase to describe
you.
It's a reach.
Those guys, I don't know how they managed to do so much besides having, I guess, those who had money, you know, full-time help with manuscript production and the ability to pursue study.
Yeah,
I feel like I aspire to be a Renaissance man, but you know I'm more like a jack of many trades and still blunting my fingers on trying to get any of them right.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And you know, I think if a person's honest with themselves and their ego is not so oversized, once they delve into a lot of different areas, you realize you really don't know anything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the tricky rewards of surviving. You know, like I've been through a lot, particularly the last few years. Lost my son maybe 4 years ago. He was schizophrenic, and you know, that my gratefulness for his life is always with me, and as in my memories of him is always, they're always with me, but I'm also, I think, been given a bit of sympathy for where people are coming from, just in terms of making it, you know, day to day.
Wow, thanks for sharing that. I'm sorry for your loss. That's,
well, it's important to get it out there. My wife at the time was really brave in writing up, you know, what a person he was, my Russell, Russell Sparrow. And we got it out there, and it was one of the few great benefits of those evil networking vehicles that we try not to use too much, like Facebook. And mm-hmm. you know, I plenty of friends came forward and said that they'd had losses, similar losses, and you know, besides the schadenfreude of that, there was a lot of just like, wow, look, these people really had their stuff together and they lost a kid. And it just, it's, schizophrenia is not pretty, you know?
No. A very dear friend of mine's brother suffers from that. And you know, the whole family has to embrace it, you know, or run away, it seems. You know, you can't be in between.
Right. Yeah, I like embrace or run away. That's, you know, because you want to do everything and usually at the same time.
I suppose, yeah. You know, yeah. And this friend of mine, he hasn't run away. His mother deals with it more than anybody. Mm. But I guess that's what a parent does, right?
Yeah, it's one of the challenges. And I got to play squash with my girl, Mary Louise, who was visiting over Christmas. She threatened to come and cut my hair if I fell asleep, but I managed to avoid that situation because my girlfriend's got the low-level COVID now, the Omicron. And,
yeah.
And, you know, so we couldn't be in the space together, but... yeah, I'm just grateful to make it happen to be in this space, and you know, looking for ballast for my ambitious sail. You know, I'm just I'm always trying to find moments to slow down and do good stuff with what we got, you know, with the time we have.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. You know, and you are involved in so many different things. You know, what is there one, And by the way, your daughter, Mary Louise, is that her name?
Yes, Mary Louise.
And did she cut your hair or no?
No, she didn't succeed in that mission. She got me some socks that match, and that was a bonus. And I'm wearing the sweater she gave me, so we'll take that.
But besides being a good parent, an involved parent, you're a professor, you're a book lover, a business person, a performer, a writer, all of these things. Is there one part of all of that or one aspect of all of that that stands out for you or is more representative of who you look at yourself as being?
Yeah, I guess there's a cord that binds all. My buddy Sebastian Knowles, who's a great Joycean English professor, would talk about the nexus omnia ligans, which is a wonderfully easy phrase for a Latin phrase, the cord that binds all, the nexus, the connecting thing, and the all omnia, of course, and ligands like ligament. And for me, the nexus omnia ligands would be something like, something like instruct and delight, you know, from Aristotle, from the Poetics, which I translate to my students often as spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm always finding, if I can, ways of sweetening, you know, my ABCDarian and professorial instincts to try to teach people stuff with a little bit of sweetness. And I guess I try to sweeten my own days with, you know, chasing books and making songs and meeting people and engaging and trying to, you know, make the world a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah, trying to make the world a little bit better for yourself, I would imagine, if you're anything like me, you know, and also hopefully it has a positive effect, your actions, your approach on those around you, right?
Yeah, it comes back, you know, so sometimes it's a parent writing a note, like I got a Christmas card from a kid I coach, and, you know, she was just saying that she was grateful that I was helping her kid along. And it's just it's a kick to get exercise and get paid to get exercise, and then also just to watch kids go from, you know, kind of fumbling and, you know, apparently uncoordinated to really figuring out how to move on a squash court, which is like a racquetball court. You know, it's a small, it's a living room size space where you bang the ball off the wall, and then you got to get the heck out of the way. So your opponent can have room to return the shot to the front wall. And, you know, the points go forever once you get the basic hang of it. And, it's just, you know, it's, you work up a huge, sweat very quickly just because, you're trying to, you know, chase this devilishly hard to retrieve, in some ways, a low bouncing ball and smack it away from your opponent, and then get out of their way while they get their chance.
It sounds very metaphorical.
I know, right? It's a lot like politics, or certainly a lot like the repartee or conversation. You know, my I had a mentor, another Joycean, Walt Litz, who talked about, you know, he was in his 70s or 80s when he said, I'm just getting to figure out how to join this conversation, and now I don't have much time left, you know. But
yeah, I hear that. I hear that. My wife and I often say that, you know, it takes takes your whole lifetime to unfold, unravel, understand all the stuff that you're influenced by, that you come into. And, mm-hmm. and just when you feel like you're starting to get it, you know, as right. You said, yeah.
Well, but it sounds like you're in a position with this, with your journalism and your interviews with your pals and with wide, far flung, you know, people.
Yeah.
To take stock and you know, be part of the conversation, and of course, bring people out. That's neat.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, I mean, it is. I talk to so many people every year, and such as yourself, and people that I know well, people I've met for the first. You and I have never spoken before this moment, and it's so gratifying, and it's so beneficial. It's, you know, and I do learn so much. Yeah, it's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Talking with Ned Sparrow here on Troubadours and Rock on Tours, a man of many hats. Professor, writer, editor, performer, squash coach, and I think maybe at some point, you know, you have a guitar nearby, don't you?
I do.
At some point, maybe whenever you want, you know, if you're working on something you think it fits into what you're sharing with us in our conversation, you want to, you know, play a little bit.
Let me see if I can. Mm-hmm. Dance with a lot of men. Fought in an ugly war, gave my heart to a mountain, but I never loved before. Nervous when you turn away, my heart is always sore. Tuxedo gave me diamonds, but I never loved before. Been on the road forever. Always passing through. You're my first love and my last. There is no one after you. Lived in many cities, you know, from Paris to LA. I've known rags and riches. I'm a walking cliche. I tremble when you touch me. Want you more and more. I taught the Kama Sutra, but I never loved before. Been on the road forever. Always passing through. You're my first love and my last. There is no one after you. And then I sometimes do a little whistling bit with that that goes. That's called, what is that called? It's a Leonard Cohen poem.
Oh, is it? I was wondering.
It was put to music. And I thought it was one of those gimme poems, the way Billy Bragg picked up the Woody Guthrie poems, and, you know, those scandalous and wonderful, sexy ones that
I love. Billy Bragg, and I love Woody Guthrie.
that he never put to music. And I was putting that Never Loved Before, or there's two great hooks in it, Never Loved Before and
I love the Kama Sutra.
No One After You.
The Kama Sutra line is fantastic.
Right?
Yeah.
So it turns out it was put to music, and I think with his blessing, but as I was working on the song, when his poems came out, his son edited, you know, his passing was, what, 2 years ago, a year ago, I thought it's a good time to try to put that to music, and then I realized he had put it to music, and so copyright issues and excitements, but... I didn't check out the version until I was kind of happy with my own, and now, of course, I can't hear it any other way, which is nice.
Yeah, it is. It is. The art of you know, singing and playing instruments is so special, such a an important way for human beings to sort of express and to you know, sort of hear and feel what what other people are thinking and going through.
Right.
Do you share that sort of thing in your bookstore? And do people come in looking for books and also get a chance to hear Professor Sparrow perform?
Yeah, you know, I've had great luck with like real touring musicians. People show up and play and in a small space there. And we had a song circle there just before COVID came on. And, you know, it's now more and more books. Yeah, I always have a guitar ready, and I often, you know, people will often just pick it up, and then one in three people who shows up is ready to play something, and it's great. You know, we listen and exchange some ideas.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest. Oh, yeah.
We, you know, the song circle bit is fun. We have a group of maybe 10 of us in a core group, and then maybe 20 people overall, just from the Baltimore and DC area, who get together and play songs every pretty much every month based on a theme. We had trains as the theme the last time when it was at Station North Books.
Excellent, excellent. That makes sense. And let's talk about books. I mean, you obviously love books, and you have 10,000 plus books. Any of those that are like treasures? I'm sure the whole lot is a big treasure for you. But
sure. Well, you know, the lot used to be worth more before everybody had a library in his hand, you know, or her hand. There's still young people who are collecting, and it's encouraging to have them come in and you know, look for, you know, even reading copies of Jane Eyre or something from Thomas Hardy or whatever. And it's great to be able to put it in their hands in this scarily, you know, dauntingly busy space with lots of books, and it's somewhat organized by genre, and then, you know, at least at one time recently it's been alphabetical by author, but, you know, I try to pull them out, and then I have some treasures in the back room or in a bank vault. The one, you know, the I have an incunable that I managed to come across a few years ago on cryptography, the first book on cryptography from 1517.
Wow.
Of course, in Latin, and, you know, an early printed book, incunable. And cryptographia is the title, and you know, the idea of this being the first printed type book on spycraft and on secret transmissions of words and cryptography, just fascinating to me.
Oh my gosh!
I came into book collecting, I guess, as a grad student. I was always collecting, even undergrad. But in grad school, I would show up with these beautiful illustrated texts, you know, on like 18th century. Scholar artist William Hogarth and the professor at Hopkins is like, well, where's my annotated edition that I get a little kickback from? And I said, I can't afford that one, but I've got this beautiful one here. And then they would gather and populate. As a modernist, 1890 to 1935 is the stuff I really know best as a teacher and as a scholar. But those books, like, you know, Gatsby, you know, that's, we're talking $100,000 book in a dust jacket. If you can get a Scott Fitzgerald Gatsby.
You know, I just had a really great conversation a few months ago with, I don't know if you know her, Martina Mayok. She won the Pulitzer Prize a couple years ago for Cost of Living, a play that she wrote. And she's working on a project in England with a few folks to stage The Great Gatsby again.
And, oh, wow.
And her love of that book, she was just effusive. It was amazing how much stock she puts into that book. So yeah, I don't know, you guys need to get together.
Right Yeah, it's a treasure, and it doesn't do me a lot of good as a book slinger, book dealer, but, you know, the availability of audible books read by, you know, spectacularly well-trained actors and readers has been, you know, eye-opening. And also it's a great thing for me to have in my ears when I'm cataloging, you know, physical books, to have my classmate Elizabeth Rogers reading, you know, something from another Princeton classmate, Jody Picoult, you know, and have that in my ears while I'm looking at older books. It's really, that's a great time to be in that conversation.
Well, you,
so I love the idea of Gatsby on stage. It seems, I don't think I've seen any stage versions of it.
I think there have been. I'm not sure.
I know. I've seen the Robert Redford film.
Yeah, the films for sure, and then the Leonardo DiCaprio one as well.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, but, you know, it must be great. I know that's one of the things you do. I mean, you record audio versions of books, and you have a great voice for it. I can tell why you get that kind of work. But do you also arrange for other people to read books as well to create audio versions, or you just do it, you know, you contract yourself out to give your voice to a book?
Yeah. It's for me, it's been, it was a serendipitous moment, maybe 5 years ago, and I haven't stuck with it. I'm still excited about listening, and doing some readings of just stuff that comes across the transom, but mostly like on Instagram or something, you know, at my Station North Books site. And the way I found my way into it was a buddy, a nutritionist, was getting Joel Fuhrman, whose famous book, Eat to Live. Mm-hmm. It was a big seller, a bestseller, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
Encourages people to eat their vegetables, you know, before the Michael Pullen stuff, basically saying, you know, eat high nutrient stuff and fewer meats and carbs. And I became a real proselyte for it as I was reading it. It was a buddy of mine who was producing Fuhrman's work, and I said, you know what, I'd like to give that a try. And I just started reading, and there was the medical terms were a little bit difficult, but I study them up a little bit, and it's a kick. It was fun.
Yeah, sounds wonderful. And audiobooks are becoming more popular. You know, what do you, as a reader, as a professor, as a book lover, as a writer, do you have a problem with books being listened to rather than read?
Yeah, you know, I feel like there's so many learning styles that. I know that some people have trouble getting it by listening to it. I'm particularly lucky in that I can feel like I can follow it. But I don't think it's the same in terms of study, like a lot of the books that, like, you know, Gatsby and, you know, all the stuff that I did when I was doing my PhD back in 96, just before everything became digitized and audibleized. I feel like I know those texts better, or probably best of all, that I first read. And a lot of those I do return to and read in the flesh on the page. I don't think that the word is in any danger of getting subsumed by the whatever forms we put it to. I feel like even the clipped style that kids and people and I are writing in now is still writing, and it's still communication, and
I love it.
I like to see it. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that insight, Professor. And we're just about out of time this go around. I really enjoyed talking with you. You're the first interview, the first conversation for our 2022 winter season, and I appreciate you taking time out. I mean, this is just 3 days into the new year that we're recording this for our broadcast. Thank you for taking the time out, and I'd like to give you an opportunity before we part ways, so to speak, to maybe share a little information with people that how they can get in contact with what you're doing, and also maybe just, you know, sharing, letting the folks know where you're at, what you're thinking as we go into the new year.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I'm at Station North Books. It's one word, and Station North Books, Insta and places like that. But the physical place is just between Charles Street, the Charles Street Theater and restaurant corridor, which is just north of Penn Station, Baltimore. And I'm there weekdays and often weekends, and love to meet people and put books in their hands. And I'm putting my blessing onto 22 with a couple of couplets I'm working on. One of them's for Naomi Shihab Nye. It's something like, kindness, stand by me, kindness, stand by me, Naomi Shihab Nye. Yeah, she's a poet. Mm. And I'm going to put that to music one day. And my other blessing for 22 is something like another couplet I'm working on, which is, from a rib and from the stars, that's how muddy lucky we are. And thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Professor Ned Sparrow. A pleasure. Hopefully we speak again in the not-too-distant future. Have a great 2022.
Thanks. You too, and all of yours. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Shut my eyes, all the world drops dead. I lift my lids, all is born again. I think go waltzing, pounding blue and red, and arbitrary blackness gallops in. I shut my eyes, and all the world drops dead. Dream that you bewitched me into bed and sung me moonstruck, kissed me quite insane. Topples from the sky, hell's fires fade, exit seraphim, exit Satan's man. I shut my eyes, and all the world drops dead. Fancied you'd return the way you said, but I grow old, drops dead. I think I made you up inside my head. I think I made you up inside my head. I think I made you up inside my head.
And now, a short essay from the Sun Magazine's Reader's Write section, October 2021. This is titled, My Sister Megan is Only 13, and it's written by an anonymous individual. My sister Megan is only 13 months younger than I am. Growing up, we played together, whispered our fears to each other in the dark, and had each other's backs until junior high. Megan was cute and also trusting. When boys invited her to get drunk and fool around, she went. Afterwards, the guys told stories about her, and she ended up getting a bad reputation. In the early 70s, girls were expected to be chaste. I distanced myself from her, as did her friends. She was alone. The weight of the insults and abandonment crushed her, and she began to act out even more with boys, alcohol, and drugs. My parents, who didn't understand what was driving Megan's behavior, punished her, which only pushed her further out of our family circle. She ran away several times and was finally sent to reform school. When she came home a year later, she hadn't changed, and she went back to being high more often than not. Megan dropped out of school and developed several addictions. One night, she took so many drugs, she thought she was going to die. She prayed to stop using and offered to give her life to God if she lived. After she survived, she did exactly what she'd said she would and became a zealous born-again Christian. I believe it saved her life, but it created a new wedge between us. She pleaded with me to accept Jesus as my personal Savior. We'd been raised Catholic, and I was content with my religious beliefs, but Megan attacked them because, she said, she didn't want me to go to hell. Offended and hurt, I once again distanced myself from her. A few years later, she apologized, and I strove to offer her support. The trauma she'd suffered as a teen had left her with mental health issues that she worked hard to overcome. Her old self eventually returned, and she became a true blessing to have as a sister. When Donald Trump appealed to the values of evangelical Christians in order to get elected, Megan jumped on the Trump bandwagon. I couldn't figure out how this gentle, loving, generous woman could support someone who seemed to go out of his way to hurt others and had lived a life of greed and exploitation. The only time we spoke about it was when she declared her support for Trump and the entire Republican agenda. My response was to stay silent. We barely communicate now. I would have been saddened, but not surprised, if I had lost my sister to drugs or alcohol. To lose her to this charlatan and his conspiracy-driven movement is something I never saw coming.
So keys in the tote from a friend said I told. No, we can't be free. Now I'm running behind. It's a quarter till nine, headed to Spring Street.
The other day, candles scented and Christmas cards mailed, the warmth of flannel pajamas while you root around for a sandwich in the fridge that Mr. Stiv from the Hollywood section of town sent over the other day. His son Chuckles and you used to run around together and play. He lives in Cherry Hill now, a surgeon.
Tell me how you want me. Tell me what I can do. All your love will haunt me if I ever go from you. All alone, tired and wanting you, baby.
And there you have it, episode 454 of Troubadours and Rock on Tours, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, Ned Sparrow, The Sun Magazine, and The Anonymous Writer, and these musical artists, Thelonious Monk, Chicano Batman, Coco Rocco, Ned Sparrow, Hannah Jadagu, Cut Worms, Branford Marsalis, and Terrence Blanchard, too. And of course, I would like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care.